When you see the word love in the Bible, is it always talking about the same thing? No, it isn't. L-O-V-E, spelled the same way, but sometimes it's talking about a love that has nothing to do with how you feel, except that it may demand you overcome your feelings. In fact, or control your feelings, and always seek the good of somebody. It's an attitude that esteems or places a value on somebody. That's what I've chose to call caring love. There's another kind of love that has to do with feelings. The Bible uses the same word, but it's a different kind of love. We'll be talking about that in another lesson, affectionate love. Then the Bible uses the word love for a third kind of love in the husband-wife relationship, having to do with the conjugal relationship, physical love. We'll talk about that again in another lesson. All three of these are important, and they're interlinked. One can affect the other. The one we are studying now, caring love, is the one that will form a foundation for a lasting relationship. And it's one that we don't have an option about. It's commanded that we love in this way. We looked at some verses in our previous class that demonstrated some of the nature of this love. Do you remember some of those particular characteristics of this love and what verses illustrate it? Somebody says to you, what is this kind of love you're talking about? How would you identify it? How would you describe it? What? 1 Corinthians 13. Okay. That's a good text, and we're going to be looking at that. Romans 12, that's an excellent text, and we're going to be looking at that. John 15, how does John 15 bear on it?
She said John 3:16.
Oh, I thought you said John 3:16. Okay, how does John 3:16 bear on it? What did John 3:16 say? God so loved the beautiful world, right? God so loved the world when it was in sin, when it was stood condemned, when it was unworthy. So what does that tell you about this love? Exactly. It is a grace love, isn't it? It's not dependent upon the other person, how beautiful or good they are. God so loved the world. John 15 is an excellent passage also. Jesus said something about this kind of love when he was with his disciples on the night of his betrayal. Do you remember what he said? Greater love has no one than this, and that he lay down his life for his friends. So what does that tell you about this kind of love?
Sacrificial love.
What?
Sacrificial
love. And it's measured by sacrifice. How much are you willing to sacrifice for the welfare, for the good of others? Greater is a measure, isn't it? Greater love has no one than this, and lay down his life for his friends. That's right. We looked at the love, this love in 2 Corinthians 8 and 1 John 3 tells us something about this kind of love. Do you remember what those passages tell us about this kind of love? Did you take notes in class?
It's the proof of your love.
It's the proof of your love by what you do. In 2 Corinthians, he said your contribution is a proof of your love. In 1 John 3, we know love by this, that God sent his son or laid down his life. That's how you know love. And so you can talk about it. You can tell your mate, I love you, I love you, I love you. But it's hollow without action. It's proven by what you do. All right, so we just looked at some verses that describe this kind of love in the Bible. Now we're going to begin looking at passages that actually discuss it in the context of the husband-wife relationship. We're going to start in Ephesians 5. So if you have your Bibles, please open there to Ephesians chapter 5, verse 22. Now, we've already looked at this text in regard to what facet of the husband-wife relationship? What?
The wife being in subjection.
That's right. Authority. The wife being in subjection. That's right. And how many times is the husband told to rule his wife in this section? Not one. What he is told to do when she is a submissive wife, or whether she isn't, but when she is submissive, he's told to do what three times? To love her. And so we'll see that when you look here at the text, verse 25. Husbands, love your wives. Verse 28, so husbands ought to love their own wives. Verse 33, to love your wife. Now, so if a fella is deeply in love, he just can't wait to get home and hug and kiss his wife. That's what this is?
Concerned about the
welfare. Sir?
Concerned about the welfare.
Okay, how do you know that? I agree with you. How do you know that's what it is? Verse 25, husbands, love your wives just as. Say we got young people in school in here. What kind of word is that? What kind of word modifies a verb?
Adverb.
You're not in school. An adverb.
They don't teach that anymore.
An adverb. Love in what way? Just as. And we have a number of these adverbs throughout this text that tell the way this love is to be exercised or demonstrated. So love your wife just as Christ also loved the church. And that's talking about once we're baptized into Christ, correct? He loves us just as Christ loved the baptized believers. Is that it?
He loved us while we were still sinners.
He gave himself up for her. John 15, greater love has no one than this, than what? Lay down his life. Look at the text. And look what he's telling a husband. Love your wife that way. What if caring for her welfare means you got to quit watching football or going fishing? What then? How much do you love? See? So, whatever sacrifices need to be made, get up early to go to work, provide for your family, work late if need be, whatever. You sacrifice yourself for the good of the other person. Gave himself up for her. Now, note verse 26 and 27. You have three that's, T-H-A-T. Look at those three that's in the text. That he might sanctify her. What's that mean? Sanctify her. Set her apart. That's right. She's to be something special. God loves the entire world. But these people will be something special. How so? Having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word. So he loves her and cares about her. And he wants to treat her as somebody special. He wants her to be clean. Question, man. Does your wife feel like somebody special by the way you treat her? Secondly, He sanctified her by the washing of water with the Word. Do the shows you choose to watch on TV, the magazines you bring in your home, the language that comes out of your mouth help her to be clean, morally and spiritually? That's the love Christ had for the church. And He said, husbands, love your wives like that. There's a second that. And He said that He might present Himself, the church, in all her glory, having no spot or wrinkle or any such thing. Here again, you see the idea of honor. Where does the Bible tell a man to honor his wife other than this passage? That's over in Hezekiah 1 and 2. Where? Hebrews?
1 Peter 3.
What verse?
7.
Dwell with your wives in an understanding way as with a weaker vessel, and grant her honor. Honor. Here He uses the word glory. He wanted to present His bride in all her glory. Are the decisions you make, men, designed to uplift and honor and extol your wife? Do we even think about that? Will this demote her, make her feel bad? The things that come out of your mouth, the things you say to her, the way you treat her, will it glorify or demean her? So, sacrifice for her glory, that she'll have neither spot or wrinkle or any such thing. The third, that she would be holy and blameless. Interesting, all three of those have to do with her purity. And again, you know, if men don't set the example in the family by their spiritual devotion, does that help a wife to be holy and blameless and clean and pure, or does it drag her down? Sure. So here's the question for us, men. Does my spiritual leadership help my wife to be holy and blameless and clean and pure and a servant of Almighty God? But I love her. Really? Prove it. By being the spiritual leader in your family. By making the choices that will lift her up and help her be God's woman. So you can see clearly, while we studied these verses in our last class, that defined this kind of love. A love that is an attitude. A love that seeks the welfare of, esteems someone. A love that sacrifices for somebody's good. You see that applied in this very text, that this is the kind of love being talked about. Is there any indication in this text that the wife is pretty or sweet or kind? No. It's independent, as Sam talked about earlier, of what she is. So look at verse 28. Husbands, love your wives. What's that next word? What kind of word?
Adverb.
As. And that word as defines what?
How to love.
Love as. Not just love. Love this way. And so, as their own bodies. What does that tell you about this love? What does this tell you it's not?
It's not
sir?
It's not romantic.
Not romantic. Oh, I'm glad you said something. I meant it the first of my class to apologize to Ennis. Last class, I had asked a question on the checklist. It had two parts. Ennis was answering, I think, the first part, and I was, or vice versa, and I maybe he was answering the second part, and I was answering the first part. And so I cast some dubiousness on his answer, but he was right on target. I went home, looked at that, and thanks to my good wife, she called it to my attention, and so I owe Ennis an apology. He was right on. My question had really two angles to it. But anyway, Ennis said on this one, love your wife, your own body shows it's not affectionate love. It's not you look at yourself in the mirror and just say, oh, you sweet, lovely thing, you. I hope not. But it's, as he indicates in verse 29, how is this love proven? How is it proven? Verse 29. Nourish and cherish. When it's cold, you get a coat. When you're hungry, you eat. Somebody threatens you, you go into self-defense. You nourish, provide what's needful. What does the word cherish mean?
Hold dear.
Hold dear, something valuable. We talked about this being a love based on esteem. Did we not? Value. You esteem yourself. Yes, you do. Love your neighbor. How? As yourself. As yourself. And so you love yourself. You esteem yourself. Esteem your neighbor. Now here's telling you love your wife as your own body. You nourish. So, fellas, I've got that covered. I pay the bills. I give her a car to drive. I give her credit cards, the stuff she needs to buy. I got it covered. When we studied companionship, what was man's problem? He was lonely. God said, I'll make a helper what?
Suitable.
So, if you're going to build a house suitable to someone, what do you need to know? What they like, what they need. And so we learned that man is a fourfold being, right? Learn that from Luke 2:52, correct? Jesus advanced in wisdom and in stature and favor with God and man. So here's the woman. She's made to adapt to the man. We know that. So what kind of being is she?
She's fourfold too.
She's fourfold too. Not just physical. Not just a pretty body. Not just a sweet voice. She has spiritual needs. She has emotional needs, social needs. So when you nourish her, do you nourish her emotional needs, man? You ever touch your wife, not because you like it, but because she needs it? You ever give her a hug because she needs reassurance, not because it feels good to you? Her spiritual needs. Are you the kind of man that provides what she needs spiritually in leadership, words, knowledge, example? Nourish and cherish. Treat her as valuable. Do you treat her as valuable? Do your words treat her as valuable? You know, if you talk about your car, it's that old beat up piece of junk. That make you think you really esteem it? You cherish it? No. How do you talk about your wife? Nourish and cherish her. That's what's commanded of us, fellas. You say, but you don't know my wife. Doesn't make any difference. If she'd be sweet, I'd love her. Is this based on that? No. Nourish and cherish her just as. There's our adverb. So we'll get grammar lessons in here as well. Just as Christ loved the church. And so he said, down in verse 33, each individual among you is to love his own wife even as himself. So here's the responsibility of the husband in caring love. Suppose a fellow said, I know it said, I just don't love her. What's he to do?
Love her anyway.
That's right. Learn it. It's not an option. You want to go to heaven or not? You want to serve God or not? So I just can't get that feeling. It's not a feeling. It's an attitude. and a way of treating somebody.
Steve,
so yes.
If we were to, as men, if we were to excel and strive every day to practice this kind of love, we would find that it would cause some of those attitudes and some of those things to go away.
Your exact excellent comment. If we treated our wives like this, it would solve many other areas of problems about attitudes and feelings and that kind of thing. It would go a long way. It would go a long way to building the foundation of affectionate love, which we'll talk about in our next class or our next lesson. So that's an excellent observation that Jeff made. That's right. Now, there's nothing in this particular text that says women are to love their husbands, and yet there is. Now, what is this kind of love? Is it a feeling? What does this love do? So what's best for a husband in the relationship as far as the relationship with his wife? That she's contentious and combative, or that she's cooperative, that she respects his leadership, and if she submits to him as she does to Christ, is that for his good? Yes, it is. Turn to Titus 2. While you're turning there, let me call on your memory for just a moment. We studied Romans 13 in a previous class. Paul said, "Oh, no man anything except to love his neighbor." And then he described in specific ways that is demonstrated. Don't answer Todd, don't answer Rocky. How is that?
You know wrong.
What kind of wrong? You're right. Do no wrong. What kind of wrong?
Theft, murder,
false witness, covet, adultery. And then he said, these are what? What's his terminology?
Commandment. Summed up.
So I want to take all of those. I just want to sum them up. How do you sum them up, he said?
Love thy neighbor as
thyself. Love your neighbor. That's right. So if you understand that, when you read the last part of the Ten Commandments, there's 10, right? First four have to do with the love of God. Last six, love of man. I want to sum them up. You can sum them up in two commandments, can't you? Love God, love your neighbor. All right, so now look at Titus 2. The older women, verse 3, are to train the young women. Verse 4, to do what? Encourage the young women, 2. You say, well, there it is, love their husbands. That may be caring love, but I doubt it. It's a different word, although I don't base it on that alone. Train the young women to love their husbands, to love their children. That is, if I understand this, he's probably talking about to delight in your husband, to delight in your children. This love is the love of friendship and warmth and enjoyment. Teach young women to enjoy and delight in their relationship with their husband and their children. You know, there are young women that don't know how to delight in their children. I can't wait till school starts. I can't wait to get them out of here. Love your husband. Love your children. Then he says, to be sensible. Make good decisions. Would that include finances? Would that include how they use their smartphone? What they text? Would it? Would that include how they dress?
Yes.
Sensible. Good decisions. To be sensible. Pure. So he never has to worry about what his wife's doing, where she's going, what she puts in those texts. Pure. Workers at home. Managing the household, taking care of domestic affairs. Kind, being subject to their own husbands. Sum all that up for me. with one word?
Love.
There it is. Those things are what's good for. Those things are the kind of things that'll make her husband better. So while the word love, like in Ephesians 5, doesn't occur, the whole text is one about a woman loving her husband. If we understand the idea that Paul used, same writer, by the way, in Romans chapter 13, and you can sum all this up. She's to care about him. To care about the home because of him. When he gets home from work, what's the home like? She cares about that because of him. She watches how she dresses for him. She watches how she dresses so he doesn't doubt her purity, etc. For him. And so the whole text... Yes, Ennis?
Well, this part about this is just too easy because all I have to do is think about this one.
Do what now?
All this part is too easy for me because all I have to do is think about this
one. Okay, well, that's great. That's good that you can feel that way, and that's the way it's supposed to be. Older women, would that include mothers? Would that include grandmothers? Let me ask you something. If a woman has spent her entire life in business pursuits and social pursuits and civic pursuits, will she be equipped to train young women? Something to think about, isn't it? And so if a woman devotes herself to Bible study, prayer, service, and learning what God's plan is for her and her family, then she can help those younger than her. And you don't have to be 80 to be an older woman. That's relative, older versus younger. You could be 30 and be an older woman. So, older women train the younger women. And so it's certainly an obligation here on mothers. Mothers may train their daughter, and daddies too. We want you to get an education, make a lot of money, and go to school, and so you don't have to depend on some stinking man. Really? Is that the training that ought to be given? Look at Proverbs 31.
Steve?
Yes, sir.
You mentioned women that might be devoted to other pursuits. There's men and women among God's people that I've witnessed are unable to do or either unwilling to do what Paul was Titus about in Titus 2. Not all of them, perhaps because they were caught up in other things. It may just be because they've never placed this expectation upon themselves. And that strikes me because I know that in other places it's not common perhaps for people to talk about or teach on the family like is done here, or perhaps for people to really ground each other in the study of love. Right now you're applying it to husbands and wives, and it's crucial, but if a person is going to try to measure up to what Titus was to obligate the brethren to here, they have to have an attitude of love, try to mentor younger people, younger men, younger women, or to have the courage to lead, any of those things. And some of those qualities and virtues, of course, need to be present in the home as well. And if they're not present in the home, if a mother's not teaching her children, if a husband's not trying to lead, then obviously there's going to be a real absence of that with regard to how brethren rise up to help train each other.
Very good comment. In our early classes, in fact, I think it was the first class when we talked about why study the family. One of our points was, how does it impact the church? Remember that? And Todd brought a good point. If there's an absence of spiritual and moral training and example in the home, how is it going to impact the church? And he made the observation that this text, chapter 2, talks to older men as well as older women, younger women and younger men. So it covers the whole territory. of our obligations if we live according to sound doctrine, verse 1. And then he made this point about what we're to teach. And that's what he said in verse 15. He told Titus, you teach these things with authority. Not the authority of a pastor. The authority of God's Word. This is what God's Word teaches. So good observation. Look at Proverbs 31. How many of you have a servant, ladies? None of you?
Our children sometimes think they're her servants.
Okay, sometimes they think they are. How many of you have a woman that you have to do your work and maybe, in fact, how many of you have more than one? You don't have any? Well, we can skip Proverbs 31 because it's not about you. Look at Proverbs 31, verse 15. What does this woman have?
Maidens.
Let's see, ladies. I don't know what kind of clothes you're wearing today, if they're expensive or not. I hope they're not just plain old plain clothes like you can buy at the ordinary department store, because if so, you're not this woman. You'll note in verse 21, let's see, there's Bailey there, and there's John Michael back there, and there's Noah. They look like y'all have just kind of pretty plain clothes to me. I mean, they look nice. But look what this woman clothes her house in, down in verse 21. Scarlet. Finest stuff, man. She buys hers at Nordstrom. In fact, she don't even buy it. She makes them. You buy your clothes ready-made? Well, you're not this woman. Wait, you say, I'll go buy material and make them. No. This woman even makes the material. This verse has been sadly misused to talk about the fact that in the Bible, it encourages an industrious woman who's busy making money, busy in commerce, because it says in verse 16, for example, she considers a field and buys it, and with her earnings she plants a vineyard, etc., etc. When we start reading the book of Proverbs, he tells us the nature of Proverbs, chapter 1, verse 6, and he calls them riddles. What's a riddle? Got to figure it out. The meaning's not lying on the surface. And throughout the Proverbs, you have things that are stated that are not stated literally. And you have to look for the figurative idea. Obviously, much in this proverb is not literal. If it is, it doesn't fit anybody in this class. And yet he uses this imagery to teach some valuable, valuable lessons about a worthy woman. Back in verse 10, an excellent wife, your verb may say a virtuous woman. The word is the idea of a woman who's capable, able. You might see a footnote to that effect. She's capable and able to the task before her, and that's her husband and her family. Now that's a virtuous woman. That's an excellent woman. An excellent wife who can find. And so when the writer writes this, he says they're not everywhere. What makes a diamond so valuable? What?
Rarity.
That's right. If you go down to Walmart and buy them, they wouldn't be so valuable. You know, if they're just a dime a dozen. This woman is not any woman. Her price is far above rubies, he said. Far above jewels. So then he began to describe her. I want you to note verse 12. I want you to tell me from what we've studied thus far, I want you to rephrase verse 12 and tell me what she does.
She loves.
What?
She loves.
You can't find a better definition of carrying love than verse 12. She does him good and not evil all the days of her life. We went through a number of verses that show that's the nature of this love. In Luke 6, Jesus says, love, and then it follows it with what two words? Do good. Love, do good. In Romans 13, love does not do what? Wrong. There you are. There's the two sides of it. Here it is. You want a passage that tells a wife to love her husband? Here it is. Once we understand the definition of this kind of love. She does him good and not evil all the days of her life. Now, there's a number of indications, but our time is very limited, so I'll not get into those. Maybe someday I'll preach a lesson on Proverbs 31. A number in this class have heard it, I know. But there are a number of other indications that he's not talking about a woman being busy. And note verse 13, she looks for wool and flax, works with her hands in the light. She's like merchant simp. She brings her food from afar. Did you go down to the neighborhood Walmart? You're out. She brings her food from afar. And it says, verse 16, how many fields have you bought and sold them? She buys a field and sells it. It's not a real estate woman. That's not what that's talking about. And so all through here, he's got this description of a excellent woman. Listen to me. That's contrary to every other commendation of women in the Bible. What's esteemed in women in the Bible? Godliness, devotion to family, love of her children. I tell you what, I wouldn't want this wife personally. I don't want her. If you take it literally, look at the text. It says, verse 18, her lamp does not go out at night. Verse 15, she rises while it's still night. So from before daylight till after dark, she's out buying and selling and working in the field and traveling about. When does she ever have time for her husband or her family? I don't want this kind of woman, if you take it literally. But you have this description, all of it, most of it, at least revolving around the idea of clothing. She gets the wool and the flax, these kind of things. All right, now, when you get down to verse 25, he drops the figure. He says, here's what I'm talking about. Strength and dignity are her clothing. That's what she's been working on. Strength and dignity of character for herself, for her husband, for her children, so that in verse 21, she's not afraid of the snow for her household are clothed with scarlet. She has equipped her children with strength and dignity for the storms of life. And when the snow starts falling and the blizzards they have to face, they're ready because she's helped build their character. Look, it says, verse 23, husband's known in the gates. Why is he known in the gates? I'll tell you why. They said, man, you have some nice rags there, fella. Where'd you get those? My wife made them. In other words, she helps make the man. That's the idea. And so strength, she can add strength. She can add dignity to her children, to her husband. So she smiles at the future. She opens her mouth in wisdom, verse 26, teaching with kindness on her tongue. She looks well to the ways of her household. When, if you take the first part of the proverb literally, when? But here, she looks well to the ways of her household. Does not eat the bread of idleness. Or, you know, there's women who are lazy. They just don't want to accept the responsibility of being a wife and a mother. Lazy. Selfish. I want to do what I want to do. And then it says, her children rise up and bless her, and so should they. They sing her praises. Young people in this class, if you got a mother like this, you better praise her. You ought to be telling her, thank you. You ought to be hugging her neck, saying, I love you. And if you pray, young people, you ought to be thanking God for her. A lot of the young people don't have that kind of mother. They don't have a mother who's devoted to her husband. Her children, bless her. And then it says, her husband praises her. Men, do you praise her? Do you thank her? Do you honor her? You ought to, if you got this kind of wife. Says, you excel many daughters that have done nobly, but you excel them all. The lady in the business suit up in the high rise. Boy, isn't she successful? No, this woman excels her. She may have a six-figure salary up there, but this woman, who doesn't have a salary at all, excels her. Charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord, she should be praised. You can see where all this stems from in verse 30. Here's the foundation of it all. She fears the Lord. And so, give her the product of her hands, let her work, praise her in the gates. Great, great chapter on a woman's love for her husband.
So her wealth is godly.
Ma'am? Sir?
Her wealth is godly.
Yeah, she's... Okay, that's right. God's the one that proves over. Good. Yes, that's right. All right, 1 Corinthians 13. We're out of time. We'll finish this lesson. We'll do 1 Corinthians 13 and Romans 12, the Lord willing, in our next class. I want to again encourage you to, husbands and wives and the young people, sit down and go through the checklist if you're not doing that. And then, with the Lord willing, we'll get into the next lesson on affectionate love in the husband-wife relationship. Thank you for your good attention this morning.